At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello, everybody. Good morning and welcome to the United Stands. I'm Mark Goldbridge, and this is your latest Manchester United transfer news and news this Monday morning. Ignore the 24th. It's not the 24th. I've done it again. It's the 28th, actually. So we're 4 days further into this transfer window. And the question has to be, are Manchester United moving quick enough? Well, we've got a story coming in from Laurie Whitwell, journalist, Athletic, saying that Manchester United are willing to wait and do nothing for the next 2 weeks and leave it till the rest of the transfer window. We'll give you the exact story about that in a moment. But does that mean we're snubbing a deal for Sesko? Because Newcastle are looking to do a deal for Sesko today. And if we're going to sit on tour, Wilcox, Berarda are out on tour. They're not doing business. So are Manchester United going to be doing business in the next 2 weeks? Or is it true that they're comfortable just sitting back and waiting to the last few weeks of the window? We'll give you that. Also, maybe it's not true, because out in Italy, they're saying that Manchester United could start a transfer domino effect by moving for Kolo Muani. We'll talk about that. He's back on the agenda for United as well. Is Luke Shaw heading out of Manchester United? Is Donnarumma heading to Manchester United? Who is the 18-year-old striker that we're about to sign at Manchester United as well? And some good news around Calvert-Lewin too. So lots to get into on the show this morning, but I think the big thing to talk about here is the impact yesterday of Sesko potentially being an option for Manchester United, very much led by Fabrizio Romano. Well, this is what The Athletic are saying, Laurie Whitwell specifically, and I quote, "You've got the executive structure of Omar Berarda and Jason Wilcox out here in the US. They're aware that this tour, they've got the two big players that they wanted. They're aware that they can ramp up negotiations and what they do in the final weeks of the window when they get back. Obviously, they have got people in the UK and on the continent of Europe working on talks." So basically, what that is saying is that Omar Berarda and Jason Wilcox are out in the States. They're very happy with their two big signings in Mbeumo and Cunha. And they're aware that if they want to, they can ramp up negotiations when they get back in the final weeks of the transfer window. Now, look, that could be completely and utterly dispelled by Manchester United making a move for Sesko or Lemens in the next few days. But we have to go based on, you know, experience. And how many times have we said we don't do business when we're on tour? And how many times over the last few years have Manchester United left it late in the window? I've never been a fan of Ed Woodward. I've seen it before, out on the Asia tour, out on the US tour. We've got our director of football and our CEO out in the US. So look, are we going to get business done on this transfer, on this US tour? I don't know. But what I would say is, if it is true, I think it's a mistake. I don't need to sit here and rant and rave about it. You can put your opinions in, of course. I think it's a mistake. I think it's a mistake we've been making for years, whereby what we do is we go out on tour, we don't do any business, we haven't done enough business, and then we sit there going, oh, we'll act in the last few weeks if we want to. I mean, there's almost a double strand of hypocrisy if this is true. And obviously not every journalist is correct, and Laurie Whitwell is certainly not David Ornstein or Fabrizio Romano, far from it. In fact, he's probably a journalist that gets most of his information from the club, if we're being completely honest, and sometimes it's very accurate, which is why we're starting off with it this morning. But ramping up negotiations in the last few weeks of the window leans towards we think we're going to get bargains. But then we've had Amorim and the club saying anybody who's thinking about leaving it till late in the window for Garnacho or Antony, they can forget it because there won't be any bargains. And then we're doing exactly the same. And it's almost like sometimes, you know, it's difficult because you, as I say, you're assuming the story is true, but we're almost treated like fools because on the one hand, well, you know, these clubs waiting for our players to buy and they're under the window looking for a bargain, they're not going to get one. And then we're putting it out that we're ready in the last few weeks to ramp up negotiations if we need to, as if we're looking for a bargain as well, which, you know, doesn't make much sense. But the biggest issue I have with it is that we have done this year after year after year. We have operated at the end of the market, spending big money year after year after year. And look, simply, let's just talk about Ugarte. That was a very, very, very important signing last summer. A midfielder was really important. It happened at the end of August when we'd already played three Premier League games. That player then didn't get a pre-season. United were happy to operate doing that, and it cost us. And, you know, I don't want to talk about Liverpool or Arsenal. We are playing them in the first eight games. I don't want to talk about Chelsea and Man City. We are playing them in the first five games. But the harsh reality is they're better than us and they've done business quicker than us. And I always think in life, as much as you want to make your own path, you can learn a lot from people who are more successful than you. You can take little bits. I mean, if I was starting out wanting to be a footballer or something like that, and I was 15, I mean, look at what you can learn from. You've got Ronaldo's dedication. You've got, you know, David Beckham's, you know, right behind me there. He's, you know, practicing free kicks, etc. There's so much you can learn from. You'd be an idiot to say, I'm not going to watch any videos about Ronaldo. I'm not going to watch any videos about Beckham or Rooney. I'm just going to go in the garden and teach myself. You draw from experience. And it just feels to me like United are only drawing from their own experience of what has effectively been, to be blunt, failure. When you operate late in a transfer window, you're not prepared for the season. And when you're not prepared for the season, it has a knock-on effect on performance. So I've got to say that, look, I hope the aspects of this story are just not true. But we'll talk about the impact it potentially has on Sesko and other deals. But if you're tuning in late, this is the words of Laurie Whitwell from The Athletic. The executive team is out in the United States and they're aware that if they need to, they can ramp up negotiations later in the window when they get back. They're very happy with the two signings they've made already. That to me reads like, I mean, to be honest, you can read it how you bloody well like, and I'll read it like this. It reads to me like we're really happy with the transfer window we've done. And if there's any opportunities late in the window, we might act. And I'm sat there going, okay, so if you're happy with the window we've had and you're looking for opportunities late in the window, that's scary because I'm looking at the window we've got and I'm going, we've spent £127 million on two number 10s and I really do like them, but neither were priorities. The striker and the goalkeeper and the midfielder was. And you're sat there going, you're happy with your business and you'll look for opportunities. We need those three players I've just said there. And on top of that, as we move on, I want to get into some of your comments because there's lots coming in. Make sure you smash a like on the video. What impact does this have on Sesko? Because it could effectively be a transfer snub. If Newcastle, as we understand, are in deep conversation with Sesko, personal terms are basically agreed and they just need to negotiate a fee. If we don't walk into that deal in the next 48 hours, we won't make that deal. And he will be holding up a Newcastle shirt. And if he's holding up a Newcastle shirt, that is a potential rival, if we were good enough, for fifth. That is the last spot in the Champions League we can get. And if Newcastle gets Sesko and he scores 20 Premier League goals, they're going to be there or thereabouts. So a rival is being strengthened with a player that would strengthen us that we're just going to sit back and let go to them. And that confused me. That confuses me. So look, let's see what happens in the next 48 hours. But if we're sitting on our arse in the US tour, you know, lapping up people buying shirts and, you know, investment chats and missing out on signings that are actually priorities when they're going to go to rivals, that's very, very disappointing because I'm still laboring under this statement of we've been planning this transfer window for ages. And I don't see that at the moment. And that's all I'm asking. When are we going to see the planning for this transfer window? And what I would say about Sesko is, saw a very good tweet this morning from Swedish Rumble talking about the changing landscape of football. And effectively, you're seeing people like Wirtz, Caicedo, there are others who are going for ridiculous money, like £100 million plus. And maybe 10 years ago, you would see a 26, 27-year-old going for £100 million plus. But the football landscape has changed. It's weird because football players are playing longer. Like Lewandowski's into his mid-30s. So why is it people aren't paying £100 million for somebody who's 27 who could play for 8 years? And the simple answer is, if you buy a player like Wirtz at 22, he's going to play for at least a decade. So it works out cheap at £120 million for a top-class player to play for you for a decade. But even if he doesn't play for you for a decade and he goes to Real Madrid at 26, you're going to make money on him as well. And that is why players in their early 20s that have established themselves as top talents are going for a lot of money. And you can see that someone like Sesko actually is a potential bargain because at what, 22, 23, you buy him for 60, he does really well. You could have him for a decade or you could sell him at 26 and get your money back. So there's a huge value in the market here. And if you're Newcastle and they get Sesko, I know they're going to be disappointed with Isak going, but you sell Isak for 140, you bring Sesko in for 60, and then you sell him again in 3 years. I mean, it's just you're printing money. I don't know why we're not over this deal. From a financial point of view, I mean, fair play to Swedish Rumble. It sort of opened my eyes. The reason Liverpool is spending that British transfer record on Wirtz, the reason Chelsea were buying people for 100 million, and the reason it's going to keep happening for people in their early 20s is that you've got a sell-on value or you've got a decade with them. It's value for money. And United are sat there going, well, we don't know whether we fancy this. I personally, you know, let's see. As I said, I'm not sitting here stating that what Laurie Whitwell's saying is the truth, but he does get a lot of information from the club. And if we are sat there going, we're really happy with these two signings and we might do stuff when we get back from the tour. When we get back from the tour, we're basically 10 days out from Arsenal. That ain't good enough, in my opinion. Get your comments in, as always. I want to talk about Moani, but I just want to grab some of your comments because there's lots of people coming in. That's not the right thing to click. There we go. Here we go. All right. John United says, fans and the media will say it's Amrim's fault that he can't improve the shit that's been here for a while. As always, we are delayed United, says John United. Yeah, and I think, look, I would just add what I think to that. I think that completely honestly, and you will all know this as people who watch the United Stand, we can sometimes after a game or after something that frustrates us, say something that realistically, when we calm down, we go, maybe I overreacted there, which is why I sit here this morning on a Monday morning, quite calm, just had a cup of tea, had my breakfast. I'm not hungry. I'm not hangry. I'm not stressed. I know what Liverpool and Arsenal have done. They're better than us. They've had a better window than us. I don't want to talk about that. What I do want to talk about is we had not an opportunity, because an opportunity suggests that we had some role in it. We had a potential for the Glazers to sell the club, a new owner to come in, clear the debt, fund the stadium themselves and start pumping money in like Todd Boehly. And that would have been the dream. And for me, I think that was the only way back. We didn't get that. We got a 28% shareholder in Sir Jim Radcliffe, who came in as a very, very vocal person who has somehow managed to place himself as the owner of Manchester United when he's not. I mean, all anybody talks about is Ineos Sir Jim. I'm in charge of the football side of things. I'm in charge of sacking people. And yet he only owns 28%. So that's been remarkable in itself. But if you go along with that story, and I think there's a problem with that because he's not the owner. He also came in with a load of bluster around changing the football club, mistakes of the past, turning things around. And on transfers specifically, I'm massively disappointed. I thought last summer was disappointing how late we did the deals for Ten Hag, considering De Ligt, Mazraoui and Ugarte hadn't been done at this point of the season. They hadn't been done at all. They weren't. So that they did it very late then. But I thought, well, you know, maybe first summer transfer window, they're organising things, you know, Ashworth and Berarda are only just coming in, give them the benefit of the doubt. I like the signings, even though they're late. Obviously, they then sacked Ten Hag, which made very little sense, having spent that much money on him. This summer, I really was going to be the summer where you judge them. And I look at the summer transfer window and I go, well, it's worse than last year, which is incredible. It's also Amrim's first year, their guy, which is incredible. So effectively, we sit here, late July, this is their guy, Ten Hag wasn't. They've given him less than Ten Hag got, and They haven't given any of the priorities, and we're again operating late in the window. We've just come back off an Mbeumo deal that took about 2 months, and we paid Brentford exactly what they wanted, which is very reminiscent of Sancho, Maguire, Wan-Bissaka, and every other deal we've done in the last decade. And also, like the last decade, we're sat here going into a very important season, looking at it going, I bloody hope and pray that we do some deals in the last few weeks of the window. But that's not how to operate. So forgive me, I'm not ranting and raving, but I'm very frustrated again, because I don't know at what point we're going to learn that proper football clubs don't operate like this. And what concerns me is that coming out of the football club again is this belief that they are right and we are wrong, that we're happy with what we've done. We'll look at the market in the last few weeks when we get back from the tour. There's no sense of panic. It's almost like they think they're doing the right thing, and yet every other competent football club isn't doing that. And look, I don't count Spurs or Villa or Newcastle as competent. I think they're better than us and they haven't done a lot of business, I'll agree. But the four clubs we're meant to be competing with is Chelsea, Man City, Liverpool and Arsenal. And they have all done business way before us, and they are all way better than us. I think the reason we do business late is a financial one. I think the reason that we don't get this business done quickly is a financial one. I don't think we want to be paying wages and fees early in the window, because every week you don't, you're saving money, because that's the only logical reason I can think. Because in a footballing sense, you know, fight me on it if you want, but on a footballing sense, I mean, I'd love to have this conversation with Sir Jim or Jason Wilcox or Omar Barada. We just won't get it. And it would be a grown-up conversation. I would just say, in a footballing sense, you can't explain to me, or please do explain to me, why doing business after the start of the season and after pre-season helps the football team. I don't think there is a justification for it. So therefore, it has to be a business decision, doesn't it? Make do United, says Keel Robinson. Emily Derry's in the house. She says, not in my house. She says, it's a mistake and it's arrogance. We've known we've needed a striker and a goalkeeper since April, May, and now we're going to wait till the last minute again, says Emily. Well, the question is, Emily. I'd like to ask Emily a question. I've actually got an interesting update on Villa. We'll bring that in a minute. The question is, Emily, will we get a striker and a goalkeeper? And what quality will they be this late in the window? Magno is a new member of the club. Thank you very much, Magno. Hope you're doing well. Brian says we all hate Leeds. And Dave the Brave says, wake up, Mark. We can't sell. That's why we don't buy. Wake up, Dave. That's not my problem. That's not my problem, Dave. That's like going down to your local restaurant that does a really nice curry. You look at the menu and it says no curry. And you ask the waiter and they go, we didn't get any chicken in because the supplier didn't give us any chicken, so we can't put curry on there. Yeah, well, it's an excuse, but it ain't my bloody problem. I like your curry. What am I supposed to do? Well, we couldn't get any from the supplier. Well, but that's your problem. That's your mistake that you haven't solved. So Dave's saying we can't buy because we can't sell. Why is that my problem as a Man United fan? I think too many fans act like accountants. Chelsea seem to have found money. They've sold the women's team. They've sold a bloody hotel. Other clubs seem to try to find ways of doing it. I think you're falling into the trap, Dave, of we're a business, we can't do it. And some fans go, I mean, there are literally Man United fans out there that, you know, will sit there and go, well, we can't do it. What are they supposed to do? We can't do it. We haven't got any money. We can't do it. I'll tell you what, I mean, I can't believe I've got to tell you this on a Monday morning. Do I need to tell you what they could have done so that we could have spent money? Are you serious? Are you absolutely serious that you want to sit there and say, what are they supposed to do? Well, there'll be people out there screaming lists out now. One of the major things they could have done is pissed off and sold the football club that they've destroyed to somebody that wants to run it properly like a football club. I mean, that would be numero uno. Another option would be to move into that bank account of yours that's got billions in it of personal wealth and get it into the club like Todd Boehly. So I don't buy the excuse of that. That's just, you know, crap billionaires running a football club like a business. The manager they wanted and they won't back him, says Rico. Weston says, I saw a Romano video stating Isak wants United and it's an imminent here we go. Was that real or AI? Wishful thinking. Come on, United, says Weston. Definitely wasn't real, Weston. I don't know whether you were asleep or whatever, but AI is dangerous. I mean, I've seen AI picture. I'm not, you know, this is something for, remind me on the 8 o'clock show tonight about AI. I think there are positives to it, but I actually think people are going to start rebelling against AI, because I saw pictures the other day of Hulk Hogan in his casket with his dog, and people thought it was real, because apparently his dog's really upset that he's died. And I was like, it's very clearly AI. But this is the thing, AI will, you've got to have your head switched on, basically. There's a load of rubbish out there. The Moose one says, I think this season will be magic. A new mindset is being displayed. Garter, Mainu, Casemiro, Collier and Gore. Chelsea's the real threat this season, but we do need goalkeeper very desperately. I'm not falling for it. Roosh says, they're playing us like toddlers. We can buy in December as we will have a great window in the summer. Now they spend 1 month on a player and making excuses, so they only have to spend on three players this year. I mean, look, I don't remember whether it's been said by the current regime, but it certainly used to get said by United that we don't care about the January transfer window because we're interested in the summer transfer window. Look, I think Brian Mbeumo and Cunha are going to be transformative for Manchester United, but I think there's a limitation to what they can achieve. We are going to go from 15th to somewhere. With Cunha and Mbeumo, we're going to go up, but we will hit a ceiling of, let's say, 6th at best. The goalkeeper and the striker and the midfielder take you into 5th and get you Champions League football that we needed yesterday. I thought Amrin wanted a Premier League proven striker. I honestly think Watkins is number one. If it's not true, Mitrovic on loan. So Sean, we're going to move on to the striker next. Thank you very much for that. And hi, Mark says, Ram, I completely agree that we need a striker and a goalkeeper. But last year, our strikers failed because the chance creation was abysmal. Our signings will significantly improve us in that front, says Ram. Yeah, but the problem with that, Ram, is the conversation is not about whether we need a striker or not, because I actually agree with you that if you give people like Rasmus and Obi and maybe Xerxes better chance creation, they'll score more goals. I agree with that. It's logical. The question would be, if you give them 20 chances, how many goals will they score? Because a Watkins might score you 15 and a Rasmus might score you 8. So that's why you would go for a striker. But the big question, Ram, is if you're justifying we don't need a striker because the strikers haven't been given chances, we're just following the facts. United have said they want a striker publicly. They want a striker. And why have they said that? Because they tried to sign Delap. They tried to sign Jokeres. They tried to sign Ekitike. They have held talks with Watkins. So if they walk out of this summer transfer window without a striker, you can try and spin it that, well, you know, we've got people here who can score goals and maybe they will. But we publicly know they wanted a striker and they haven't given the manager one. And if they want a striker, that means that Amrin wants a striker. And that's the point. It's not about whether we could get by without one. Maybe we could, maybe we couldn't. But the club went for a striker and they haven't got a striker. And that's a public failure. And that's not backing your manager. And that's concerning. At this point, we might as well get the guitar out because you've got to have faith. I'm scared for the season, says Monoxide Poisoning. Thank you very much for that. Okay, let me come back to the news because it is a news show. So we're going to go striker. Maybe that update we had there about United being happy with the window so far and not doing anything on the tour and maybe looking at things when they get back. Maybe that's a snub to Sesko that we're not going to get involved. Maybe we're not going to get involved in the Sesko deal. Maybe he goes to Newcastle. I think that's a huge error. But where would that leave us in relation to strikers if we don't move in on Sesko? Well, there's a story this morning, Corriere dello Sport, talking about Muani again, saying that Manchester United are very interested in Muani, who is currently a PSG player, who was on loan at Juventus. And effectively what they're saying is that this could start a transfer domino effect that could benefit Manchester United in the sense that if Muani goes to PSG, Juventus, who want Muani, could then move for Rasmus. And with Muani at Manchester United, that could be a pathway to move Rasmus out. And also, it could lead to Douglas Luiz coming in on loan as well. So effectively, what they're saying is the domino effect could be a positive, could be a negative for Manchester United, depending on how you look at it. But Muani comes to Man United. Juventus can't get Muani, so they go for Rasmus. And we also get Douglas Luiz from Juventus on loan. I think that fits perfectly in with what the story was just there. That, to me, sort of looks like the sort of deal that you do late in the window that's riddled with if, buts, and maybes. It maybe could be a really good deal, But it is possible. It's a deal you look at and you go, that was desperate in the last few weeks of the window and it didn't work out. I like Douglas Luiz. He's in the midfielder we should be going for. I would like to keep Rasmus, but if we bring a striker in, I understand he might go, he might want to go. And I like Mwani, but does he tick the boxes of being in our top five candidates at the start of the summer? No. Does he tick the box of being Premier League proven? No. Does he tick the box of being a decent talent? Yes. Is he a risk? I would say probably so. So, look, Mwani's going to be a consideration. But I agree with the comment there. We broke it on Thursday. The priority for Man United is Ollie Watkins. I think he still is the priority. I felt different yesterday, but this story coming out, if it's true that we're relaxed, we're happy with Mbeumo and we're happy with Cunha, and we're going to look at business when we get back, when we can ramp it up at when we get back from the States. That to me doesn't feel like we're going for Sesko. I don't think if you're going for Sesko, you're going to sit back for a week and a half and say, we'll look at it when we get back from the States. I think that leans more towards Watkins. I think that leans more towards Villa are on tour, we're on tour, they want 60 million. Watkins wants to leave, Emery wants to sell him, we want to buy him. Let's look at this when we get back and give everybody a couple of weeks to think about it. I still think Watkins is the priority. If we're going to go for Sesko, that needs to happen now, because Newcastle are looking to do a deal now. So it may well be that we're not going to do a deal for Sesko and we are going to look at Watkins when we get back from the tour. He is the priority until that changes. Whether Villa are going to lower the price or not. It's interesting with Villa. I always forget that they did sign Malin. And I think that's something to remember, because I look at Villa and I go, they've only got Watkins up front. But they have actually been linked to Calvert-Lewin this morning. Leave it. That's up to them. They've been linked to Calvert-Lewin this morning and they have got Malin, who they bought in January. So they do have, if they bring somebody in, they do have two strikers. If they can let Watkins go, if they bring a striker in, I was thinking if they let Watkins go, they need to bring two in, but they do have Malin who can play up front as well. So look, there's still an exit strategy for Watkins, but I think it's Watkins ain't going anywhere until Villa get a replacement in. And that's what makes me think that this Laurie Whitwell story could well have legs, because Onana's going to be back for the Arsenal game. So there'll be no rush on a goalkeeper. Villa won't let us have Watkins unless they've got a striker in, and that's not happened yet. So I would say there's no urgency on transfers. On the 28th of July, I would say there's no urgency on transfers. Apparently, there's just been a tweet from, let me have a look, Florian Plettenberg. So we will get that up. Let me have a quick look what he's saying. So I still think Watkins is the priority. It's typical. It's typical transfer news, isn't it? It's typical, you get positive about something and then reality kicks in and you can only follow the news. And I think that in a way they've probably cut it down. Although this is positive. So Pletty goal, I've been waiting for an update from him actually, because Florian Plettenberg is based in Germany. Pletty goal on X/Twitter. So this has come out very much in the last few minutes. And look, this is exactly what it's all about. You follow the stories. So the story we have this morning from Laurie Whitwell is that United are sort of happy with what they've got and they're going to sit back and not do anything until they get back from the US tour. But that can change if an opportunity comes up. And this is what Florian Plettenberg has put out in the last minute. Manchester United and Newcastle, so hot off the press, Manchester United and Newcastle are currently in talks with Sesko's management. Both teams have presented their projects and financial offers. The decision now lies mainly with the player and his camp. Offers are expected to be formally submitted to Leipzig following the verbal agreement. However, Newcastle are pushing a lot. Now, I just want to say this. Unless Fabrizio Romano or David Ornstein says that Manchester United have presented a financial offer, I don't believe it. I don't believe it. Now, Pletty goal's good, but he can miss and he can score. But I have to always say there are five strands to a transfer. One, it's totally true. One, it's totally bollocks. One, it's the agent pushing it. Two, it's the club, selling club pushing it. And three, five, it's the agent and the using it to get a new contract where they are. Well, Leaps, he's not looking for a new contract. But we've got to be very aware that it could be the agents or Leipzig using Man United to push Newcastle up. And you have to consider that. It's a good update. It's encouraging. And I think United, as I said before, they've got to have a go, because Sesko at 60, 70 million pounds at his age is going to be good value for money. But, and he's a good player and he's a striker. But if he doesn't come to Manchester United and goes to Newcastle, he's a good signing for Newcastle, and we'll probably say we were never in. Now, Pletico saying that United have presented their project and financial offer, that doesn't fit in with somebody like a Fabrizio Romano, who would be very well briefed on this and has been very well briefed on Sesko for quite a while. So I would just warn caution on that one, because we could be being used to push Newcastle up. I mean, look, even Romano hasn't said that we've presented an offer. So that reads like we're both in talks with Sesko's management and both teams have presented their projects and financial offers. That's not with Leipzig, by the way. That's not with Leipzig. That's with the player. So, yeah, I think you've got to be a little bit wary of that. But we might get a drop from Romano or Ornstein in the next hour, in which case you might say it's true. But we just need to be very, very careful with that, because that reads like we've presented a project and a financial offer to the player. Now, that's the way a transfer should work. 100%. That's how a transfer works. You know, there is another flow for a transfer. You speak to the player, personal terms agreed. You go to the club, deal done. Here we go, official. So the first path is to speak to the player and agree personal terms. Absolutely. But if we're in personal conversations with Sesko, that's significant for Manchester United, because what you do then is, as somebody in the chat just said, you end up with an Mbeumo situation where he only wants Manchester United, and then you've won the race. You've just got to negotiate with Leipzig for the next 2 years or however long it takes. So look, Man United have got an opportunity here. That is why I said about the story we broke this morning. Not we didn't break it. The story we started off with is, I'm not going to scream and shout about it, because although it reads like United aren't going to do anything until the last few weeks of the window, and we're very happy with what we've done, and we're not going to do anything while we're on the tour, it only takes a minute to fall in love. It only takes a minute for a story to break that changes all of that. So, you know, and with Sesko, I don't think you can wait till the end of the tour. So I think we're going to find out in the next 48 hours whether we're in for Sesko or not. If we're not in for Sesko, I think Watkins' long deal could be in the play. If we are in for Sesko, then I would expect us to find out in the next 48 hours or so. So let's wait and see. Sanjeev says Sesko wants to join United. Who said that? I know it was coming out yesterday. It was from Leipzig resources, wasn't it? You've got to be very careful. There's Leipzig sources saying he wants Man United. There's Pletico saying that we've been in talks with Sesko. But remember, these are local German journalists, and Italian journalists do the work for the Italian clubs. Our journalists are client journalists as well. Look at how many of our Man United journalists just feed stuff out from the club. So a Leipzig journalist or Pletico saying that we're in talks with Sesko, you know, they might just be doing it to bump up Newcastle offer. So we just got to wait and see. I hope it's true. I really do. The Moose one says they'll do the Man United tax. Every time we knock on doors, the price is jagged up because of our stature. But my opinion, I think we should give our current strikers a chance, but a new face is always welcome. Thank you very much. Lawrence Berry says Leipzig dropped Sesko price 20 million euros. Don't forget. And Newcastle were always going to sell Isak for him. There we go. Thank you very much for that. A couple of other bits I want to get in into this morning. The show is absolutely flying by, so I need to just catch up on a couple of things here. We are looking at a young striker from, I believe it's Metz. His name is Idrissa Gueye. He's not the midfielder from Everton, although you'd never put it past Man United signing an old midfielder from Everton and sticking him up front. Might do a better job than Calvert-Lewin, actually. But his name's Idrissa Gueye. He's 18. He plays for Metz in France. Brentford have been looking at him. Man United are going to move for him, apparently. Could be spending up to £15 million on him, which is quite significant. I don't know anything about him. It does sort of fit in with United's, as we've seen with Heaven and Obi. We are looking at a lot of these types of players. He's not a player that would go into the team. He's a player that they'd look to probably loan straight away. That's the story. But again, if you've got Obi and you bring this lad in who's got loads of potential, at some point in the next 2 years, they become 20 and 19. And at that age, you can play first team football. So if you were to spend on Sesko and in 2 years' time, you've got Gueye and Obi, Sesko's not even mid-20s yet. So maybe that sort of fits in more with a more experienced Premier League striker like a Watkins. So, you know, keep an eye on that one, certainly. We have been linked to Donnarumma again. As I said yesterday, Chevalier of Lille is apparently going to PSG, and it's a real possibility that Donnarumma could leave PSG, which I find incredible. He's one of the best goalkeepers in the world. He's playing for the best team in the world. And, you know, this is why football never amazes me, because footballers become brands themselves. Why would you want to leave PSG? I don't get that at all, but apparently it's a possibility. Man City have been mentioned. Man United have been mentioned. How on earth are we going to do a deal for Donnarumma? I do not know, but and I do not believe, to be honest with you, but just as it's news, we'll throw that in there as well. I did mention before about Calvert-Lewin, just to put some people at ease. Apparently Villa and Newcastle are looking at Calvert-Lewin on a free. Let them look. Don't want him anywhere near Man United, but apparently Villa and Newcastle do. So that's interesting, and that could be positive for us. Obviously, we were a little bit worried about Nicholas Jackson. That doesn't look like it's going to happen as well. Not going to happen as well. But this one caught many of your eye over the weekend, and you were saying, why aren't you talking about it? Why aren't you talking about it? So I will bring it in towards the end of this show just to say I was aware of it, but I didn't want to bring it in. So reports over the weekend, predominantly from The Sun, that Luke Shaw is ready to leave Manchester United this summer and has been looking at Saudi. Now, the source is terrible, but it did get me thinking, if you were Luke Shaw, why? Well, look, Luke Shaw is very comfortable to sit on his arse and earn $200,000 a week, isn't he? Because he's been injured for the last 2 years, so he's well used to it. But if you were Luke Shaw and he actually was going to stay fit, which is a big if, he's not actually part of Amorim's plans. Like, I was thinking about this. I know he played in the final again. I mean, he's like a bloody magnet when it comes to finals, isn't he? He's a boomerang. He's always there, always comes back. But I don't think Luke Shaw is part of Amorim's plans. So it's a little bit like Mason Mount, really. If you're Mason Mount, unfortunately for him, he's had a lot of injury problems, and so has Luke Shaw. But even when they're fit, they're not in United's best 11. I don't think anybody's putting Luke Shaw or Mason Mount in our best 11 for the start of the season. And remember, our best 11s, many of us are looking at, well, we haven't made two or three signings that should be in there. So they're not in United's best 11. And many of us don't think United are ready. We need more signings. So what, again, it's sort of a contradiction. For Mason Mount or Luke Shaw to get in the United side, they actually need players to get injured. But they're the players that get injured. So talking about Luke Shaw, I don't think he wants to leave Man United. He's got a very good contract on a very good wage, and no one's going to go anywhere near him. The only option would be Saudi. But if he's got any ambitions of going to the World Cup, he has played for England in the last two tournaments, of course. He played... did he play the World Cup in Qatar? He definitely played the Euros, both Euros finals, because he scored in one of them at Wembley. But if he wants to go to the World Cup, he needs to play football. Now, what are the chances that Luke Shaw stays fit long enough for other players to get injured for him to become a first-team player at Man United? I mean, that's one hell of a path, isn't it? You know, that's like a sausage sandwich, you know, making it across a field full of lions. It's not going to make it. So If Luke Shaw wants to go to the World Cup, I think he's got to play first team football. And I don't see, he's not ahead of Heaven. He's not ahead of Yoro. He's not ahead of Masraoui. He's not ahead of De Ligt. And he's not ahead of Maguire at centre back. Martinez is coming back soon as well. So he's, as a left sided centre back, I would say Martinez, Maguire, and Heaven are ahead of him. At left back, Dorgu is ahead of him and maybe Leon. So I don't see, when you think about it, I think the source is a load of shit. And I don't think Luke Shaw will leave. But if I was Luke Shaw, I'd be looking at it going, maybe I do need to leave because where do I fit into this team? Yes, I'm earning good money, but you know, it's not like England have got, and this is a good point as well. It's not like England have got loads of good left-sided defenders. They haven't. I don't even know who plays at left back for England anymore. So, you know, and he likes turning up for England, doesn't he? So if he wants to go, then now's the time to do it. The problem he has is that he's on a reported 190K a week and nobody's going to pay that. Would we loan him out? He's probably not a loan player, to be honest, because Luke Shaw on our bench is still a decent option if he's fit. It would have to be a sale. And therefore, the only option would be Saudi. But does going to Saudi get you into an England squad? I don't know. But look, I mean, that would be a dream. I like Luke Shaw. I think he's a good player, but I don't think he's going to be that player anymore. And we gave a stupid contract up. So, you know, I think it'd be great if we could move him on, but I'm not so sure it'd be possible, to be honest. Liberamento, Lewis Hall are all good options. Yeah. Lewis Skelly as well. Yeah, he's probably not getting in anyway, is he? Let me just catch up on some of your comments here. Let's have a look at what people are saying. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in this morning. Make sure you subscribe. If you didn't, check out Beth and Ryan are out in the States. Another fantastic video. They're doing them at about 2 a.m. at the moment. They're going up. So if you are out on different sides of the world, we are occasionally doing some live streams from the US. And brilliant. They keep getting some really good backgrounds as well, so check that out as well. Marcus says Anana costs us points always. We need a number one goalkeeper. I think on the goalkeeper we're just slow. I think Lemens could happen. The question is why not? You know, he's not that expensive. I don't know why we're not doing that. Is it because we're still thinking about Emi Martinez? I don't know, but we seem to be. I think actually, talking about late business in the window like we have done for the last 10 years and how bad planning has impacted seasons, I think the goalkeeper situation is the most is the best analogy or best example, should I say. Yes, we need a striker. Yes, we need a midfielder. Yes, we should have got Mbeumo done earlier. But the goalkeeper is the biggest one. The goalkeeper is the one that really exemplifies what we're talking about here. You need your signings in for pre-season so they get used to the system and used to their teammates and they're fit for the start of the season and you're raring to go. If you don't do that, you're playing with points. You're playing with fire. Look at the goalkeeper. Amrin wants a new goalkeeper. He's going to pick Anana for the first few games of the season. Now, I don't know when it became a thing that the first three games of the season don't matter. I don't know when it became a thing that the first three games of the season are just a roll of the dice. There's 9 points up for grabs there. 9 points. At the end of the season, if you finish behind somebody by 9 points, and that's significant. And we're just playing with fire again. Mark, you forgot the vote from yesterday. Should you keep answering the same questions repeatedly, like changing the formation? We'll do that later, Kevin. Can you remind me about that? Hoyland deserves another chance playing alongside an experienced striker can help him develop. It's tough for both new managers and players to fully adapt to changes from previous systems and tactics. That's from Kevin. Mibs is a new member. Thank you very much, Mibs, for getting your badge in. We really appreciate that. Thank you very much. Pete Phillips says, I still believe Costa would be worth more points per pound over a striker. We should focus on best-in-class keeper rather than seventh-choice strikers. As Pete, we should be getting both, Pete. Look at what Liverpool have done. You know, as Premier League winners and look at what they've done, we should be getting both. We shouldn't be accepting for anything more, anything less. VK says, are we forgetting De Ligt, Masraoui, Yoro, Agati, Xerxes had first season and three managers whilst Dorgu, Heaven and Obi less than a season? That's a lot of playing staff and we need belief they'd be better much this season. Thank you, VK. Out and about with Job says, a couple of months ago, I was saying buying De Ligt was a brilliant opportunity. Refer to sell on price. You didn't agree. What's different with Sesko? Because I don't rate De Ligt. I think you're being very literal there, Job. Like, the lap is the same age as Sesko and has future sale value, but I don't rate the lap. I've never rated the lap. I don't think the lap's that good. Sesko comes with a much bigger reputation. Arsenal weren't in the race for the lap, but they were looking at Sesko for 18 months. So that will do me. He's a higher quality player with a higher potential. Hi, Mark. Watching the show from the start now. Please, can you leave a message for future Sam to read in 25 minutes? There you go, Sam. Future Sam, thank you very much for your message. Vincent says, the plan was always Mitrovic and Ndidi. I did see a story from a crap source this morning linking us to Mitrovic, but I just don't want to upset people. Do you think it would be Erasmus loan to Juventus, says Jacob? I mean, we do struggle to sell. Onana has cost us over 100 million with mistakes, says Jeff. I haven't looked. I mean, look, that's journalism, isn't it? You won't get it from the modern journalists. They're too bloody lazy. But there is an article you would have got maybe 15 years ago about that. Somebody would have wrote an article about it. United desperately need a goalkeeper, and the current goalkeeper isn't good enough. We paid £50 million for him. He wasn't £50 million worth. He cost us Champions League football in the first year, literally made massive mistakes. And probably made a lot of mistakes last year. If you analyse the games where he's made mistakes in, you could probably put a value on it. I don't know whether it's as much as £100 billion. All I know is he's not good enough for where we want to go. Yub says, besides new signings, the fitness and medical team must also improve to reduce injuries inflicted on injury on players. I think this is a great point, Yub. It's a boring point to many, but Mazraoui's already got a knock. Xerxes missed the first two games of pre-season with a knock. Anana's had a hamstring. So we've had three injuries in pre-season already. That's pre-season. Other clubs might be picking up injuries. I'm not saying they're not, but Injury FC hasn't gone anywhere. Get ready for a season of injuries, because we haven't changed a lot in the fitness department at all. Done that from Ram Monoxide Poison. Done that as well. Thank you very much. Okay, let me have a quick look at something here, because you never know until you've had a look. Yeah, Aston Villa want Calvert-Lewin. We've seen that. Man United. Let's see what happens with this Sesko story. I think Fabrizio certainly has his finger on the pulse. And I always know that when certain journalists put something out, he will know about it. So Fabrizio will have seen that Plenty Goal update about Man United presenting financial offers to Sesko. Expect an update from Romano next. I suspect we haven't done that yet. I suspect we're still deciding whether we're going to go for it or not. I think it's in the balance. As I say, Watkins was the priority on Thursday. How are we going to drop that priority to compete with Newcastle? Can we afford to do that? Or are you just going to stay out of it and let them have a free run? I think, as I said last night, with Sesko, the reason people are spending, and I'll shout out Swedish Rumble for this on Twitter, the reason people are spending £120 million on Wirtz in his early 20s is because he could play for the next 15 years, which makes him cheap. You could resell him at 26, which gets most of your money back. So buying players like this, it's worth it, and it's only going to increase. That's why Brighton would want £100 million for Belhiba, which is why when Rio says we should get Belhiba, you also have to have the intelligence to understand the market. Have we got £100 million? No, not for a midfielder. So this is a reason to maybe go for Sesko beyond the talent, is that these players are worth their weight in gold. We'll have to wait and see. We'll have to wait and see. Is it Watkins? Is it Sesko? I'm sure we'll find out in the next few hours or so. Thanks everyone for watching. Make sure you smash a like and subscribe. We're back at 2 o'clock. We've got the 8 o'clock show, of course, and anything that goes on between. Take care. Have a great day. I'll speak to you on the next one.